following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. Today, a look at guarding against brand missteps in social content for LGBTQ community messaging. We'll talk with the CEO of The Gage Collective about it right after these stories. The U.S. Supreme Court said yesterday that it will take up cases over whether the federal government must pay billions of dollars to healthcare insurers, including a now-defunct Illinois insurer, that sold coverage on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. The High Court will consider whether the government had an obligation to pay private health insurers under the so-called Risk Corridor program that was meant to offset insurer losses in the early years of the ACA exchanges. That three-year program has ended, but health insurers argue HHS owes them more than $12 billion in unpaid funds. The court will hear three consolidated cases during its next term that starts in October. For more on this story and others, visit chicagobusiness.com. North Chicago-based pharmaceutical company AbbVie has agreed to pay $63 billion for rival drug maker Allergan. And the deal with the Botox maker comes as AbbVie eyes the end of patent protection for Humira, the world's best-selling drug. The proposed takeover offers a solution to long-standing challenges at both companies. AbbVie gets a set of products big enough to diversify its revenue from Humira, the rheumatoid arthritis injection, with about $20 billion in sales last year. Allergan, which is heavily reliant on Botox, will get a profitable exit for shareholders after a four-year slide. Coming up, a conversation with a local CEO about marketing to the LGBTQ community way beyond Pride Month. That conversation after a quick word from our sponsor. At Wintrust, there's no one-size-fits-all solution because there's no one-size-fits-all business. They come in different sizes, in different industries, with different needs. You won't get cookie-cutter services based on your size. Wintrust provides personalized focus no matter what kind of business you run. Whether you're looking for deposit accounts, lending options, or treasury management solutions, Wintrust bankers are prepared to meet your business where you are and help you get to where you want to be. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. We're joined now by Teddy Height, who is CEO of The Gage Collective, which is a, I think you've described it as an anti-agency agency, here to talk with us about guarding against brand missteps for content for the LGBTQ plus community. And, you know, I think your message is a really interesting one, Teddy, because it's the idea that, hey, let's not save all of this social content and all of this outreach to this particular community for Pride Month, but rather be consistent throughout the year.
That's exactly correct. And yes, we are an anti-agency. We are a freelance collective that operates very much like a digital marketing agency. But thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about it. And I think, you know, the issue stems a lot from brands seeing what other brands are doing and, you know, throwing up a rainbow colored profile image for Pride and kind of stopping there. And I think today's audience is looking for something richer. And especially the LGBTQ plus community is looking for something richer to connect with and looking for brands that are telling authentic stories throughout the month, but also throughout the year.
How do brands begin to do that? You know, someone's thinking, well, you know, maybe someone's just heard that and thought, you know what, that's a great point. We have kind of doubled down outreach to the LGBTQ community just for Pride Month. I want to do this. And I want to move this throughout the year and make sure I'm engaging consistently. What are those steps for maybe someone who's not directly connected to that community?
Yeah, so I think, you know, brands will be able to do, you know, a variety of different things to, you know, figure out how to kind of authentically showcase and tell LGBTQ plus stories. I think a great place to start, especially for brands that are a bit larger, is tapping into their employee base that falls within that community. Those are going to be people who are going to be able to provide really strong insight and already have a tie to the brand, and will, you know, be able to offer examples of things that you can do to just kind of seamlessly start to fill content in that will help to kind of round out the story. You know, we see a lot of times brands showcasing heterosexual couples and what they're doing and slowly maybe starting to showcase gay, lesbian, transgender couples, couples of color within the LGBTQ plus community. Slowly integrating just small things into the content that you're producing is going to work wonders for you. So rely on those employees and take a look kind of at what the ideas that they're bringing to the table and leverage them as content creators in a sense, because they're the ones who are a part of the community, they are embedded in it, and they know what values are going to ring true with that audience specifically.
And then I think there's a question of, you know, we saw MasterCard earlier this month make an announcement about the way that names would appear on cards. And that was kind of done in step with Pride. And there's a little bit of a tension almost between doing something to celebrate Pride, like a launching a new product or a new feature on a product. Here, there's Pride Month, and to celebrate, we're doing XYZ versus saving all your content for Pride. And it seems like there's a really a careful balance that strategists need to make.
That's exactly correct. I mean, Pride Month is a great time when the LGBTQ plus community is celebrating love and celebrating visibility. And so it is a fantastic time to celebrate that. But there's actually a really great kind of momentum around this idea of we are 365. So we exist 365 days of the year. So integrating pieces of content, again, that are supportive of this community are fantastic, but also looking a little richer. I tell, you know, clients of ours all the time when they're looking at doing Pride things or even just, you know, campaigns throughout the year that support the community, you know, look to kind of put a little bit of money where your messaging is. So if it's something that has a cultural or societal impact, you know, partnering with a charity of some kind that benefits the community, giving back, or something, you know, on the MasterCard front, you know, putting forth kind of some strong changes like that are going to have a bigger impact than, let's just say, kind of throwing up a post on Instagram or Facebook that somehow ties the community. So there's a balance there. And I think brands can authentically find how they're going to utilize that balance to tell a story in a way that's true to them, in a way that resonates with that community from whatever platform they're using.
So much of the messaging around your company, the Gage Collective, is really about this long tail play of build this very authentic brand with your product or your company and engage authentically rather than just chase impressions and engagements. And, you know, so often we hear people saying, how many followers, how many page views did that get? How many views did it get? And that seems so short term, but there seems to be a narrative threaded throughout the Gage in which you've really prioritize this long game of building a much more authentic and realer brand. And yet authenticity is a thing it seems that people struggle with so deeply, because if you fake authenticity, you're busted so quickly by you know, your consumers. Where does one begin to even become vulnerable as a brand?
So part of our process in working with clients is we do sort of an extended discovery session when we come on board, no matter what kind of industry you're in or how big your company is. And the discovery session, and this is something I think people can easily replicate, and it really is kind of bringing your key players to the table and really discussing, you know, the nuances of the brand, the values of the brand. A great question that we like to explore as well is, you know, if the brand was to be a person and sort of interact in the real world, how would it do that? And really doing your homework and taking time to bring together multiple personalities is really important. And I think starting there is going to allow you to kind of give yourself a cushion to build a strategy that is effective and doesn't just chase the follower count, doesn't just chase the impressions. Because what we've seen over time is that a strategy that is authentic and true is going to sort of bring that growth in those key metrics that, you know, people still value and we still value as well, but it's going to allow that to kind of grow over time versus just, you know, sort of roller coastering month to month. So starting strong, figuring out, you know, how the brand is going to interact in that digital space, and then sticking true to that, no matter who touches your digital content, you know, that's going to work wonders.
When we're talking about content for Pride Month or content that has been perhaps mistakenly held for Pride Month, are there any huge missteps that you can think of in recent years of brands really just playing it badly in trying to connect with the LGBTQ plus community?
There's sort of two broad examples. You know, I won't name any names. I think one, and this is something that is just easy for brands to kind of fall into because so many other brands do it, but it is just sort of evoking, you know, the rainbow color scheme, whether it be in specific pieces of content you're sharing or, you know, as I mentioned before, swapping out a profile image to have a rainbow in the background. You know, that's great. And I think visibility is fantastic. But again, you know, that's sort of very surface level. And it doesn't really sort of pack that punch that the community is now looking for. You know, we want to support brands that support us in turn, but support now I think is sort of multi-layered versus just, you know, one-sided. And I think the other thing that I think a lot of brands tend to do during Pride Month too is adopting slang or sort of terms or keywords that are popular within the community to make it seem like they align. And sort of back to that authenticity piece, if you're not doing that 365 days a year, it just comes off as sort of very phony and inauthentic. So I think, again, being able to integrate messaging in a brand's voice that is authentic to it is key there. And going beyond just kind of that rainbow update and looking and saying, okay, how can we make a larger impact so that this community knows that we care, that we are aligned, and that we are supportive, you know, more than just the weeks of June.
Where can people find out more about Gage Collective and contact you, all that good stuff?
Totally. So they can head to our website, thegagecollective.com. That's G-A-U-G-E Collective. We're also on Instagram at The Gage Collective, showcasing, a variety of work that we're doing for our clients. And then you can also follow me on Twitter. It's Teddy Heidt. That's H-E-I-D-T, one word.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us and talking about this issue today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Continuing today's headlines, Chicago-based tech company Cameo, which built a marketplace that allows consumers to pay athletes and other celebrities to give video shout-outs to the recipients of their choice, has raised another $50 million from investors led by Kleiner Perkins, one of the most prestigious venture funds in Silicon Valley. The two-year-old company says that nearly 300,000 shout-outs have been completed on the platform. Cameo raised $12.5 million in November, led by Lightspeed Venture Partners, and it was growing faster than expected. On average, customers are paying $62 per video, nearly triple the amount just 12 months ago. Cameo keeps 25%. The list of celebrities is about 15,000. Recent additions include Snoop Dogg, who is also an investor in the company, Antonio Brown, Tony Hawk, and Charlie Sheen, who joins a stable of stars, including Brian Urlacher and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. California real estate investor Stanton Road Capital, that recently bought into Chicago's suburban office market, is turning its attention downtown and picking up an office building across the street from the Art Institute that has lost tenants in recent years. Stanton Road is under contract to pay about $34 million for the leasehold interest in the office building at 200 South Michigan, according to sources familiar with the deal. The firm is buying the building from a venture of a Honolulu-based real estate investor, which will retain the ground on which the building sits, and, according to Cook County Property Records, bought the tower and the ground in February 2014 for a combined $69 million. The 62-year-old building is the first downtown purchase by Stanton Road, which owns commercial properties nationwide totaling more than 5 million square feet, according to its website. Coming up, turns out Chicago is not one of the weakest big city housing markets anymore. More on that story after this word from our sponsor. Wintrust Commercial Banking offers a full suite of financial resources designed to meet the needs of middle market businesses and larger companies. With comprehensive and personalized financial solutions, coupled with bankers who get to know your industry's demands, Wintrust Commercial Banking is committed to providing the tools to help your business reach its strategic growth initiatives. You've got a vision for your business, and Wintrust Commercial Banking is here to help you see it through. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Later this week, we'll talk with Crane's Chicago Business residential real estate reporter Dennis Rodkin for a deeper look at this story. But for now, here is the gist. Chicago is no longer one of the weakest major city housing markets anymore. Here's why. Home price growth struggled for most of 2019 here, according to a closely watched index, but not as slow as the formerly fast-moving West Coast cities that have now slammed on the brakes. The primary reason Chicago isn't at the bottom of the list now is that it isn't wrestling with a hangover from prior year's excessive run-up in prices. Chicago's home prices in April were still a little less than 16% below their 2007 peak, according to the index, while nationwide, they were nearly 13% above their 2007 peak. The 29 percentage point gap helps explain why many homes here sell for below years-ago prices, a phenomenon that is not so widespread in other major metro areas. More on this story and others about the local market later this week when we're joined by Crane's Chicago residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin. Until tomorrow, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Thank you to producer Haima Black. Find breaking business news, analysis, data, and lots more at chicagobusiness.com. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, and let's continue the conversation there.